in the day, Putting's farm was not so, wasn't as economical as it was today. Today, many, many people can print a sefer, and it's relatively cheap. And they do. There's no way to read all the svarim that are out. There's no way to even keep up with all the svarim that are coming out. Thousands of svarim every year. But back in the day, like pre-war, it was a much different story. That it was very expensive, and you either had to really believe in your sefer or you had to be very conceited, one of the two, to put it through that process. Obviously, most of the Gedolim had svarim, although not all of them. There were many who chose not to write, even in our current generation. There were many Gedolim who, why did they need to write a sefer? Rabbi Yashav Zatzal never officially wrote anything. People wrote down what he said, but he never felt that he had to write down anything. One of the most famous svarim we have from the past 150 years, of course, is the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, which is about speaking properly, the halachas of speaking properly. And that sefer, written by Yisrael Meir, HaKohen, the Chavetz Chaim, he wrote that sefer because he had attended a drasha from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter Zatzal, where Yisrael Salanter bemoaned the fact that such a sefer didn't exist. He said, such an important area of halacha about how to speak, which is so severe in its implications and consequences, somebody should really write a sefer about that. And so a relatively young Rabbi Yisrael Meir, who was 36 at the time, took it upon himself to write that sefer. And it was a masterpiece, as all the generations since have attested to. As with all svarim, when he finished writing it, he went to get approbations, haskamas, for the sefer. One of the people he went to was the Rav of Nevada, who at that time was Mordechai Baruch Lipschitz, somebody who we don't know so much about today. And he asked him for haskama, and Rav Lipschitz was a little astounded that such a relatively young person was writing such a sefer, and the Chafetz Chaim at that time was not as well known. So he thought, because of the complexity of the topic, that it really, you had to know everything in order to write about it. It took a little temerity for a person to take that upon themselves. And here's this person writing a sefer on it. He doesn't really know who he is. He's asking for an approbation. So he said, leave it with me, and then come back later. So he left the manuscript with him, and a week later, the Chafetz Chaim gets the call that he should come in to see him, and he came in, and right away he gave him an approbation. It turned out that what happened during that week, it didn't take that long to read the sefer, it's a relatively short sefer. The Rav of the town had actually been sending his students out to, talk schmooze with the Chafetz Chaim about various things, and were trying to get him to speak Lashon Hara. And they weren't able to, no matter what tactic they chose, they were not able to get the Chafetz Chaim to say anything negative in a way that was prohibited. So the Rav of Navardik said, he's living what he preaches, and that's the best indicator that what he's doing is MS, and therefore I'm more than happy to give the approbation. In Yiddishkeit in general, we're not okay with things being on the idea, on the level of ideas, right? Philosophers can speak about very lofty things, but in their personal lives, they're often mushchasim, they're often disgusting people. Which is, it's almost the rule as opposed to the exception. And that's true for academics, politicians, everybody who's in the world of ideas. Their personal lives rarely ever are even close to the ideals that they profess. And the Torah holds the opposite has to be true, that if a person's going to be considered a gadol, even an intellectual academic gadol, he has to walk the walk as well. Unless he's doing it, then it's meaningless. Anybody can say words, but part of Torah, part of the acquisition of Torah, is to actually do the things that you talk about, and that instills within the person a yediyah, a knowledge, that doesn't come unless you're living that lifestyle. The Ramban says this is what's happening with Avraham Avinu in the last of his 10 tests, which he's being tested with, which is going to be the Akedas Yitzchok sacrificing his son. So let's see the first pasuk. Vayhi achar dvaram ha'ela, and it was after these things, Velukim nisa es Avraham, that God tested Avraham, vayomer elav, and he said to him, Avraham, vayomer hineni, and Avraham responded, here I am. So the Ramban says, what does it mean God tested Avraham? Hashem knows what's going to happen. He doesn't need to make a test to find out if something is yes going to happen or not going to happen. He knows the future, obviously. So what's the point of a nisayon? What's the point of a test then? So the Ramban writes, it's not for Hashem's purposes, it's for Avram's purposes. Every Jew has within them like an infinite love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, an infinite attachment to everything spiritual. But whether or not you do it, that's where all the difference lies. So every test that a person has is to draw out what they know intellectually to be true, but to make it practical. It's for the benefit of allowing the person to grow in a way that if they just knew it in their heart, it wouldn't be the same. Rabban actually uses the language that's not enough to just have a good heart. Right? Everybody, as we're derelict in our religious observance, we like to justify it by saying, well, you know, I'm Jewish on the inside. It doesn't help. Everybody's Jewish on the inside, of course. Somebody told me recently that obviously between the secular and the religious in Eretz Yisrael, in terms of going to the army and things of that nature, there's a soldier talking with a yeshiva student, and the yeshiva student said, but you don't do anything. You don't keep Shabbos, you don't keep kosher. So what do you want from me? And the soldier said, oh, what do you mean? I'm Jewish in my heart. And then the soldier turned the tables. He said, but look at you. You know, people are in danger. You're not going out to fight. And the yeshiva bacher told him, I'm a soldier in my heart. So it works well. So that's what the Ramban says, that every nisayon is for the benefit of the person being tested, to be able to make real, and otherwise it's irrelevant, those ideals which they already contain within themselves. If we look at the first Rashi, the Parsha here, Achar Dvaram Ha'ela, so after these things, that's a very interesting beginning, after which things? What were we talking about that it's after these things that Avram's now being tested? So Rashi says, Achar Dvaram Ha'ela, after these things, Yesh Mei Rabbeinu Omrim, some of the rabbis in the Gemara say, Achar Dvarav Shel Satan, it was after the words of the Satan, of the Yetzer Hara, the spiritual force trying to get Avram not to do it. Shahaya Mikatre Va'omer, because the Satan actually was accusing Avraham, and he said, Mikos Udish Asa Avraham, the Satan talking to God here, the Satan's telling Hashem, every meal that Avraham made, meaning thanking you for you, thanking, celebrating the birth of Yitzchak, Lo Hikriv Lefnecha Par Echad O'ay Echad, there was nothing specifically for you, Hashem. Of course, there was a celebration that he was granted by you a son, but why were there nor kabanos? Why didn't Avraham make a special sacrifice an animal just for you to show your role in this? So Hashem responded to the Satan, Amar Lo, he said to him, Klum Asa Ala Bishvil Beno? What do you mean Avraham wasn't doing it for himself? He wasn't, there were no personal elements in his celebration. He was doing it just for the fact that he now had a son. Ilu Hayisi Omer Lo, and if I were to tell him, Zavach Oso Lefanai, that you should check that son, I know for sure that Avraham Lo Hayim Akev, he wouldn't hold back. And then after that conversation, so to speak, that led to the events of Hashem actually commanding Avraham to do so. The Yesh Omrim, another opinion, Achar Dvarav Shel Yishmael, it was pursuant to the words of Yishmael, Shei Mispar Al Yitzchak, that Yishmael had been boasting when he was discussing things with Yitzchak, Shemal ben Yud Gemoshana v'lo Micha, that when the mitzvah of milah, of circumcision, came around, Yishmael was 13 years old when it happened, and he allowed Avram to do it to him, and he didn't stop. He was showing his frumkeit to Yitzchak. Listen, I was already 13, I could have said no, but I didn't. I happily accepted. So Amar lo Yitzchak, and Yitzchak was a baby, of course, when he got the circumcision. Yitzchak said back to him, Beber echanata ma'ani, you're boasting for one aver, for one piece of your body, you were willing to sacrifice for Hashem. Ilo amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if Hashem were to tell me, zerach atzmecha, you know, shecht yourself, lefanai before me, lo yisim akev, I wouldn't hold back, I'd be willing to give my entire life, said Yitzchak. And hence, that's what happened. Then the command came down to offer up Yitzchak. We see from Rashi quoting the multiple chazals here, an idea we've spoken about before, that every episode or incident that happens in a person's life, it's rarely relegated to just that person. It often affects multiple people. But the same reason why it's happening to the person themselves is not the reason why it's happening to others. If chas v'shalom, you know, something bad happens to a child, there's a reason why it happened to the child, which we don't understand, but there's also a reason, which is not the same reason, why it happened to the parent, that they should have a child having to go through them. Each person has their own relationship with Hashem, their own reasons about why things happen. And here also, Avram had a reason why this happened to him, and Yitzchak had a reason why this happened to him. The Das Torah of Yerucham speaks out here a number of ideas. The first he says is that, just short, he says it's scary that once you start boasting about yourself, Hashem takes notice. If you ever make a comment about how capable you are in a certain area, and you use that as a way to, you know, drive a wedge between you and another person, or as a one-upmanship, Hashem will hold you to that, and he'll say, okay, let's see if what you're saying is true. Another idea he brings down here is that, as we mentioned, Avram, this was the final of Avram's 10 tests. Why did he need all 10? Especially considering how severe the last one was, which was sacrifice his son. You would think that would be the only thing he needs, and why go through the previous 9 as well? So Rabbi Yerucham said that people, when we think about good people and bad people in our heads, we often tend to group them, and you know, we have a perception of who somebody is. They're on the good side of the ledger, or they're on the bad side of the ledger. And when a person is on the good side of the ledger, then if they have certain, you know, deficiencies, we try to apologetics. We'll give reasons why, okay, it's not so bad, you don't understand, you have to understand who they are, da, da, da. And whatever is bad about them, we sort of sweep under the rug. And the opposite for when somebody's on our bad side of the ledger, they can't do no good. That whatever they do, we always find a way to turn it negative and make it, even though it might be good. And Ruchim said, that's not how Hashem made people. Hashem made people that you could be both at the same time. We have different elements of our personality. In fact, we say this every day. The Gemara in Sanhedrin comments on Shema, that when we say in Shema, we say that you should love Hashem, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol miyodecha, with all of your heart, with all of your life, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol miyodecha, and with all of your money, according to one opinion. So why do you need to say, the Gemara says, both life and money, with all your life and with all your money? And the Gemara says, because there are different kinds of people. There are some people who, their life is very important to them, their health and life, and they're willing to spend any amount of money, and or for their children or other people as well, and irrelevant of what that's going to cost them future, they're willing to spend for the finest doctors, finest medicine, the finest food, et cetera, in order to promote their life as much as possible. Even if it might be destructive at the end, that they have no money. And you find vice versa as well, that there are people willing to forego their health and even maybe risk their life for the sake of acquiring money, that money is so important to them, they'll take dangerous risk in order to acquire it, and they'll be very stingy to give it out when their health might be at stake. I don't want to go to the doctor, you know, doctors are expensive. So that's also a real personality. So the Gemara says that's why Shema has to tell you both things. You have to serve Hashem, irrelevant of who your personality is. If you're the kind of person who your life's more important, then you have to remember serve Him with your life as well. You can't let your life go by. I mean, you can't let your life be a block to serving Hashem. And similarly for money, as much as you love your money, you have to let it go in order to serve Hashem. Neither of those are Risham, meaning that's just the way Hashem made them. He gave them certain good characteristics. You can have somebody who's very nice and very calm with people, very engaging, charismatic. People love being around him, but he might never open his wallet for anything. And you can have the opposite as well. Somebody who's very high-strung and angry, and it's hard to be with that person, but they're very generous, and they're willing to write big checks for things. And that's just the midos that Hashem gave them. It doesn't reflect their sitkas or their rishas. It's their personality, and that's sort of set, where you know, predetermined by Kadosh Baruch Hu even before we are born. So in the case, because there are different elements of a person's personality, Avram was tested on all of them, and it culminated in his final test, which was the biggest, which was sacrificing his son. But Lamaisa, Hashem gives us tests in the places where we need to work. The Vilna Gaon was famous for having said that if you want to know what your tafkid, your job is in this world, look at what's hard for you, and that's most probably what you're supposed to accomplish. We tend to do the opposite. The things that are hard for us, we want to sweep under the rug and justify it by saying, I'm so good with these other things. Okay, so this one I'm not so good with. The opposite, Hashem made it easy for you to be good in those other things. That's not really difficult for you. You're not going to get so much reward for being good in the things that Hashem made you good in. It's the things that are a struggle, that are difficult for us to face and to put into play. That's where our real job lies. And it can all live within the same person. If we continue in Rashi, the next Rashi says, Hineni. So when Hashem calls to Avram, Avram responds, Here I am. Kachi ani asam shel chasidim. That is the answer of chasidim, lashon anavahu, lashon zimun. And when a person says, I am here I am, it has two implications. One is, it's a language of anivas, meaning I'm your, yes, Hashem, what do you mean? I'm right here waiting for you, whatever you want. There's no sense of self there. It's just whatever Hashem wants. And zimun, lashon zimun, which means you're ready. Like, you're ready to go. Like, tell me what to do, and I'm off to the races to do it. The sense of anivus is something which we're supposed to incorporate, not just when we speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Hashem tells us to do something, but that sense of humility, like that there should be no me or I when talking to other people. It shouldn't be a factor. That should really be present in all our interactions. One of the great poskim in the late 1800s, early 1900s, his name was Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. He was the Rebbe Kovno, and he was, meaning his word was gold. If he wrote a tshuva response on something, you could take that to the bank. Nobody could bother you again once you had that in your pocket. And letters came to him from all over the world asking him different questions in halacha. In one of the towns nearby where he lived, there came an argument. The Kehila got into an argument with the Rav, which obviously happened sometimes. But in those days, it usually took a different form. By and large, for the most part, and this really only changed about 100 years ago, started changing about, during the times of Chafetz Chaim even, is when it started making the shift. The Rabbanim were not social workers. They were not, cheerleaders for the Kehila. They weren't there to inspire, per se. They were to be a presence of Torah and to inspire people because of the greatness of who the Rav himself was. They were there to answer shailas, and they had to have an expertise in order to do that. It was a much more, academic position. as opposed to the social position that congregations usually hire her for today. But due to that, the opposition they faced was often, if they faced opposition, so it was sometimes just from Baal Batim wanting to do their thing, meaning don't tell me what the Torah says, this is what we're going to do, and either get on board or get out, which actually happened to a number of Gedolim. The Shagas Aryeh, the Beis HaLevi, they were fired from positions for being involved in things like that. But there was often academic opposition to the Rav as well. That when an argument would come up again between members of the Kila and the Rabbi, so the Kilas themselves often had big scholars in them. In addition to the Rabbi, it wasn't just the Rabbi who went to Yeshiva. There was always a few people who were academically gifted and were holding a Torah as well. So in this one community, the Rav, there was an argument going on. And when that happened, then those people who are holding in Torah, in order to prove their point that the Rav is no good, they start examining everything he says with a fine-tooth comb. And if there's something which is not according to their understanding of Torah, they'll pounce on it and use it as a proof that he's not the person for them. So in this specific community, the Rav had paskened about a certain kashrus shaila, where he said what he said, but it went against ishach. When you learn halacha, and especially kashrus halacha, in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, it's most people who get smicha today, this is really the main area that they learn and are tested on to receive their smicha is in kashrus halacha, like milk and meat and treif and things like that. So there was when you learn it, obviously you learn Gemara and Cholan and Zvachim that deal with those issues. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's in Yoredeya, the Chelek Yoredeya, and the major commentators on the Shulchan Aruch are the Shach and the Taz. So you often hear people quoting that, Shach says this, the Taz argues, Shach was Reb Shapsi Kohn, the Taz was Reb David Halevi Siegel, and they lived in the 1600s. You can't go by, everything is the Shach and the Taz. So the Rav had Paskin, but it was against an explicit Shach. The Shach said, not that way. And we'll usually Paskin like the Shach. If the Shach says something, you certainly have to take into account. So they got the Rav. He said something and it was against the Shach. So now here was their chance to finally, drive it home. So they wrote a letter to Yitzchok Ochana. The opposition in town to the Rav they actually sent a telegram to Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. They were so excited about, having chapped the Rav that they sent a telegram that they have an urgent question for Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, that there was a halachic dispute in town and the Rav said this and we say this. Who does Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan think, what does he think the correct answer is? So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan reading the telegram, he, being obviously super genius and well-versed in Kehillah life, he knew exactly what was going on with this telegram. So what's he supposed to do in such a case? So what he did was he wrote a letter back to them, and in the letter he says, the psak is X, Y, or Z, like the Rav said, siding with the rabbi in town. And then he waited a bit, and then wrote a second letter, and he said, I made a mistake. There's actually a shach that says not that way, and the halacha is like the shach. And then he sent that letter. So what did that accomplish? When the townspeople got those letters, they felt confirmed that they, in the end, they said the right halacha, but if Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan himself can make a mistake and forget the shach, then it's not a big deal that the Rav could have done so as well. So he preserved the peace in town, but at the expense of himself. He knew the shach, he did make a mistake, but he pretended he was in confusion initially in order to promote peace. And the Gedolim do this, almost every day in their interactions with people. The fact that, the Gedolim can speak to people and it can be an engaging conversation, it means the Gadol is coming down 100 levels to speak to that person. and he's hiding most of what makes him a guttle. He's evincing humility, but not in a way to say, look at me, I'm honest, but just seriously hiding who he is, which is very not part of our nature in general. We want to expand on who we are, not try to make ourselves smaller, but that's what they do in order to provide for the growth of the people that they deal with.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
So I understand that, but what you're describing is like someone who's very arrogant in the way they think about themselves, even if he's a gadol. They can know, you know, a lot, much more than most people about Torah, but you know, if we believe in God, isn't everybody worth something and everybody's kind of equal?
Of course.
So, I mean...
But like with a child, when the child's upset that their toy broke, you know in the end that toy doesn't matter. And within a half hour, the child himself will have forgotten about it. But at the same time, you comfort the child, you say, oh, it was such a nice toy, et cetera, et cetera. You speak to the child on his level so that he feels better, even though you know in the end it's a nonsensical conversation. And the child himself, when he, after a few years, will realize, I was so silly for even engaging in that. Like, why was I even upset about that? And the Dumna Magid actually says that's true for everything in our lives. At any point in our life, we have things which are very important to us. So as you know, somebody starting out in their life, it could be finding, you know, the right social circles or getting their first good job or something like that. And anything you do to sort of mess with that, you know, they'll go crazy about. And then as they get settled and hopefully get married and find a decent job, they have a parnasa, then their ideals change, and it's about you know, finding security in their lifestyle and making sure everything is peaceful, both financially and with domestically. And then once they get past that, they start thinking about, you know, they might move into their 50s where they have enough money, they're not concerned about their financial security, their family's pretty set with however it's going to be. Then they want kavod, they want people to listen to them. They have a need that they should be respected, and that's very important. And anything you say to them that, you know, disses their respect in some way. So every few years, a person's ideals change. So the Dimna Magid says you should take a musar from that whatever you think is important is not, meaning it's not according to the Torah. You have to really focus at every stage of your life. There's a specific nisayon test to sort of get past what you're feeling. Now, if somebody's a gadol and they're just engaged in spiritual pursuits, learning all day and avoda all day, then they don't have those issues as much. And they see the truth, you know, at every stage of life. But when they talk to people, they can't say, you're an idiot, why do you care about that? They have to speak to them in a way that validates their feelings, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I mean, that they're coming down a level. They're not evincing who they are. They're not saying you should be living on this high spiritual plane with this accumulated knowledge, which you have the potential for. I don't know why you're engaging in this nonsense that you're coming to complain to me about, but they deal with the person as a person. So it's they're not on the same level. Everybody's equal in the sense that everybody has a neshama, everybody has potential. We don't know what our roles are in this world. And certainly we don't even know if the gadol will have better standing than us in Shemayim, meaning Hashem didn't give the same kelim to everybody. He didn't give the same potential to everybody, that some people are academically gifted and Torah comes easily to them, and some people are not. And it could be it never will. The Mesillas Yesharim says that. So that being the case, how does Hashem judge people? It's not on the results, because Hashem either makes you successful or he doesn't. It's purely on the effort that you put in. So if you have somebody who's very academically gifted, born into a great family, and they turn into, you know, a stellar, you know, academic and righteous person, they might just be winging it because that was the situation they found themselves in. They naturally have a good head. they were born in a good situation, and that's the product. And you can have some, you know, a schlepper, at, you know, born to a family that didn't have those advantages, and he might just be of average intellect and never get anywhere, so to speak, in, you know, in the communal world. But he's pushing every day to understand Mishnayos and trying to listen to what the Rav says, and facing his own challenges in life. The Gemara says that it could be when he gets to Shemayim, he will be 100 levels above the Gadol. Everybody respects this great academic, but if he didn't put effort into it, that's what Hashem is judging. However, the hard part is we don't know. we don't know who's putting an effort and who's not. So there's no way for us to accurately judge with our limited perception who's great and who's not great. The Torah says you do have to respect people who are gedolim, meaning who are tzaddikim, who know Torah. There's a mitzvah to honor those people. Whether or not you'll be better than them in the world to come, okay, you'll find out. I think we all know within ourselves that most probably not. We know a few great people, hopefully, and we know the hours they put in terms of working on themselves and the physicality that they deny themselves and things of that nature, which we know we're not doing that. So maybe some sense we have of it, but you're right. Everybody's equal in that sense. From Hashem's perspective, it's just a matter of Asik, but in terms of where a person's holding, in terms of you know, the staircase in this world, definitely not everybody's on the same level.
I understand. I'm just saying that, like, they can know if they're a Torah scholar.
Yeah.
To me, it's also like you're saying, they have to also be live that life.
Of course.
And live that life in the way they deal with people.
Yes, obviously.
So one thing is not to be arrogant.
That's true.
If they know so much.
If the shul's looking for a rub, don't hire somebody arrogant. I agree. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see the next pasuk beis. So Hashem says to Avraham, "Vayomer, kach noa es bincha zichitcha asher hatas Yitzchak." He said, "Take, please, your son." Now, noa, the word noa is always interesting because it's one of the few words which really has two distinct definitions, and you really have, and usually both are true within the context. Noa can either mean now, like take now your son, or it can mean please. Please take your son. Vayomer kachnas bincha, please take your son, es yichidcha, your only son, asher ahavta, that you love, es Yitzchak, and I'm referring to Yitzchak. We'll see what all this repetition is. V'lech lecha, and you should go, el aretz ha-Moria, to the land of Moria, v'alehu sham la'ola, and bring him up there as an offering. Al achad hel harim, on one of the mountains, asher omer elecha, which I will say to you. Meaning, I'm not telling you where to go yet. You just go, and I will tell you later where to go. If we look in Rashi here, pasuk beis in the middle of the first column, kach no. So Rashi says, eina el lashon bakasha. That no is a language of request, like saying, please do something for me. Amar lo, so why is Hashem requesting? Normally Hashem doesn't request things of us. He just says, do it. It's a mitzvah, it's a tzivui, it's a command. Here it's a request. What is the request element of this? Amar lo, Hashem said to Avraham, bebakasha mimcha, like I'm requesting from you. I'm saying, please here, amudi bezeh nisayon, please stand for me, meaning please pass this test which I'm about to put you through. Why? Why am I asking you that? In order that people shouldn't say that the first test, even though Avram had passed 9 tests already at this point, they shouldn't say that those first 9 didn't have mamish, like any kind of substance to them, from the fact that he didn't pass his 10th test. Rav Yeruchim here says, I don't understand. What do you mean? A person can have many tests, and if he passes 90% of them, that's amazing. It means he did a lot. Avram was different. Why was Avram different? Avram had to be perfect as his special place. A, he was emissary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Also, he was the father of the Jewish nation. Everything he did was going to have repercussions. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, "Kol Ava Shetuli B'Davar," any love that's hanging on something. When Batal Davar, Batal Ava, when the thing becomes annulled, like the thing it's hanging on becomes annulled, then the love itself will be extinguished as well. And vice versa, Kol Ava Sheina Tuli B'Davar, if you have a love that's not dependent on any specific element, it just is, then that's the kind of love that lasts forever. When we talk about our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our commitment to Torah and to Hashem, most people have a line where it doesn't go past that line, meaning we want to do the right thing, but we have each person's unique what their circumstances are, but within this set of circumstances, I know I'm most probably going to fail. So it could be that if I know I'm supposed to be nice to certain people, but there are certain people who really bother me, I'm most probably going to fail with those people. Like, my line gets drawn in terms of being nice the way the Torah says so with those people. Or let's say money. I'm very good. I'm willing to do everything I have to serve Hashem. But once it affects my wallet, then things get a little iffy. You find, and this happens to many people, they're willing to do unsavory things for the sake of a profit. Why? That's also part of their avodah Hashem. Okay, that's where their line is. That's the thing that affects them the most. Or public perception. A lot of times, the Torah calls for you to do something that will be uncomfortable socially, that people will look at you in a certain way. It could even be religious people looking at you in a certain way, because why are you doing that? But if that's what the Torah says, then that's what it says. For many people, that's very, very difficult to have people look at you askance and not accept you fully. For many people, that's their line. They can't pass that nisayon. Avraham had been tested in many different ways, and he had passed all of them with flying colors. But there was still one line for Avraham which had not yet been crossed, and that was his love for his son. And his love for his son was the epitome of everything Avraham stood for, that he was the midah of chesed. He imbued the world with chesed. That to do good for people, not to castigate them, not to do harm to them, but just to raise them in a positive manner and to achieve things via a root of positivity, and for getting past whatever's bad about them and just bringing them close to Hashem. And his great yearning to have a son, which we've seen up until now, and the fact that it was such a miraculous son, that it was born after so many years in a miraculous manner. So obviously his attachment to that child is going inconceivable, that Avram's a positive, loving personality to begin with, and he always yearned for a son, and they got one in a miraculous manner. This was his line. If he's gonna fail anywhere, it's going to be with the son. So Hashem said, Avram, everybody has a line, but this is your line, and in order for you to represent me properly in this world, meaning to show your devekus, you have to be able to show that you don't have a line either. Otherwise it'll all fall apart. The example you're setting for everybody will come to dust because, okay, that was Avram's line, I have my line, everybody has their own little things, and you have to let people be people. Avram couldn't do that. He had to stand tall in all circumstances. So this is going to be that final nisayon where Hashem is pleading with him. Avram, I know this is the most unfair thing to ask you, and this is really your line, but do so anyway. I'm asking you to sacrifice your son, who means so much to you, to set an example for the rest of the world about what it means to be committed to Hashem. Okay, well, we'll stop here. We'll pick up the Rashi's on this pasuk next time.
How many people?